I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic's interviews, where we get to know the people behind and in front of the creative industries. We're your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber-Smith from Scotland, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists and musicians. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as Electric Kiwi.
And I'm singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Marcin Novelli from Canada, a man who wears many hats, literally and figuratively, and I have a new one here, Jack Skellington. When I'm not releasing music under my own name or my side project, Midnight Soundtrack, I'm producing and mixing records for other artists or directing and editing music videos and music documentaries. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as my name, Marcin Novelli.
Deep breaths.
I know, right? That's a long... extended sentence.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Our new shirts have arrived.
They're not new anymore.
I don't know why. They're not new.
That's like force of habit, you're saying that. We have shirts.
I
Let's
know.
Just say we have shirts available on
we
our
We have
site.
Shirts. We're wearing them right now. If you like what you see, you can buy the shirts, not us, on our website.
There's
a link to them in our show notes, so go and grab one.
That's right. And I mean, we're in February now. Which means that we're that much closer to spring, but also that means that my new acoustic EP, The Reimagining, is coming out very, very, very soon, which I'm really excited about. But you can actually get a pre-release of it if you go and support my upcoming full-length solo album on Pledge Music. So basically all that is explained by going to marcinovelli.com/pledge. And looking forward to sharing music with you. I'm excited. That's it.
So, enough about us. Our guest this week is Brendan Brown of Wheatus. Wheatus are perhaps best known for their hit Teenage Dirtbag, but their story goes far deeper. The band have remained unsigned and unmanaged for the last 8 years and continue to write, record, and tour 15 years after their inception.
That was the anthem, by the way, of my teenage years, just so you know. With 5 studio albums released since 2000, album number 6 is currently in the works. The band are also in the process of releasing volumes 1-8 of Pop, Songs, and Death, a series of EPs available exclusively from Wheatus.com as multi-format, pay-what-you-want digital downloads. With a band biography that includes lawsuits, lineup changes, interstate art heist investigations, and more. We're excited to find out more about Brendan and also the advice he'd offer to his fellow musicians. So this is going to be a really exciting interview. Hey, Brendan, welcome to
Hi,
the
guys.
Show.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. I
feel like
I'm
after
interested.
That intro, I feel like we're in a band together now.
We are. That's it.
Yeah.
It's happened. Well, let's just get awkward. We already made things awkward in the intro. And have you tell us 3 things about yourself that everyone should know.
Oh, it's hard to come up with one.
Right?
Well, first of all, the bio is a little out of date, and I apologize for that. We just released the first single from album 7. Album 6, the Valentine LP, came out in 2013, and we got sucked into a pretty heavy touring vortex after 2013 with the. We went over and did our 15th anniversary, and then we were invited by Busted to go open on their arena tour, their reunion tour that they did in May of 2016. So, I'm saying all this, and I know I haven't myself caught up with all of it, but
thanks for the clarification. Ross is our researcher, and he failed us this time.
He didn't fail.
Okay.
It's not his fault. It's probably our fault. We're notoriously terrible for putting up new information. It's my fault because although we have the infrastructure to get the news out to people, I am still struggling to care about things like that. I'm generally preoccupied with the idea that people have better things to do than know anything about me. That would be first The second is, if you get past that and you actually want to know something about us, then we are still kind of stubbornly obsessed with making records that are recorded in an analog format, not to tape. I think tape is a big pain in the ass, primarily because there's nobody to service tape machines anymore. The techs are all like dying off, but we record without using any sort of Pro Tools editing or auto tune or time stretching or heavy EQ and compression. We record to a 1-bit audio multi-track system called Sonoma DSD, which is an artifact of the early 2000s that never went anywhere. It was designed to like replace tape, and it's the resolution is really high on the stream. So, so we're kind of that's one of the reasons it takes us 3 or 4 years to make an album. That and we're independent, it's budget stuff. And the other thing is that I'm kind of obsessed with the idea of Satan. I'm a hardcore atheist. You could even say anti-theist, maybe, but the notion of the devil fascinates me. And the way that imagination affects people is incredible. And I think it's fascinating. And, you know, I can't tell if we're slipping back into sort of another dark age of theocracy and stuff. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like it sometimes, but at any rate, it was a big part of my early childhood and early teen years, the whole Satan music thing. And I'm still kind of obsessed with it.
I love that you use the term anti-theist. I kind of almost like that better than atheist. I usually call myself an atheist, but I like the idea of anti-theist. It kind of explains a bit more of what your non-belief system is, I guess, or what you stand for and don't stand for. I really like that. I'm going to use that. Sorry, yeah, stolen.
my belief is not a belief at all. Yeah. It's a fear of the organized tyranny of myth, mm-hmm. and you know it's bad for all of us,
especially right now. This is kind of the epitome of it, I think, happening at least for the 21st century. But anyways, onward and
moving.
We got so
onwards.
Dark so fast.
It did.
Right up my alley.
Yeah. I like the way our show twists and turns. It's like some kind of movie sometimes. So as a band who had some pretty huge chart success in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. I mean, I think, and for some reason I remember Teenage Dirtbag hitting number 2 in the UK charts.
You're correct. A lot of people
do know
get
why
that
I
wrong,
remember. But... Do you know why I remember this? And this is such a sad fact about me, is I used to sit up in my room and listen to the radio every Sunday night when they would do the charts, and I would write them down each week on a big sheet of paper, and I had a folder that I could go, oh, that one went up 3, that went down 2. And I would track that from probably 96 or 97 until 2004 when I moved away for college.
Do you still have that folder, and can I buy it?
You can definitely buy it if it still exists somewhere at my parents'
you,
house.
You need to publish that, man. That's
But you know what's funny is because like this is before I really had the internet. So I had to just, when I was writing down the song names and the artist names, it was what I heard them as, and like right. There was some that
see,
are really
now,
not.
Now that
good.
Is, I knew that it was pre-internet just because I am from pre-internet. Yeah. But the fact that you were, so I'm assuming you have sort of like misspelled everything.
Oh, not everything. I was a good speller. Come on, right. Brendan. I'm, you know, what? I did pretty well in English. But no, there was some things like the specific example I can remember was that Faithless song called Insomnia. Uh-huh. I don't know if that was a big hit over there. It was huge over here. But I didn't think it was called Insomnia. I thought it was called Insonia. Completely different meaning.
It's a whole other song. Oh my
so,
god!
Yeah, so I'd written it down as Insomnia because it doesn't because it's mostly instrumental. It doesn't say Insomnia in it anywhere. But yeah. Anyway, so I've gone off on a complete tangent there.
You should hold on to those things, man. Those are that's how your mind interpreted the world at the time. Those are very valuable. The more the internet kind of stacks up its bits of data and fake news and whatever else. Mm. The more rare and special something like that actually has original pre-internet mistakes in it is going to be, you know, and that's That's priceless. Yeah.
That's the music geek in me. So from that tangent, kind of back to the non-tangent of the question. You've chosen to remain unsigned and unmanaged since the early 2000s. Can you tell us a little bit about why, and if it had anything to do with the experience you had on a major label? I saw a quote in your bio where a record executive lost his cool and challenged you to...
A duel?
I want to say leave the label or something along those lines, and you said
try it. I think his exact words were something along the lines of, if you feel that way, then you can take your damn record and get the hell out of here, or something like that. My feelings about the industry kind of predate my being involved with it, because in 1996, shortly out of college, I started working for a computer company. I say that with poetic license. They were a VPN company. They built virtual private networks for Wall Street and stuff. And I was a service manager there, sending all the techs out on jobs, and I was learning things. And I didn't have a lot of computer experience prior to the job, but I caught up quickly. And the guys who ran the company were these two sort of like cool, like long haired dudes who were into Rush and stuff. And they were, the company was right in the center of in Times Square, right on 46th and 7th, and right around the corner from all the big music stores, actually. And this is before Times Square had the pedestrian walk and all that stuff. So they knew I was in a band and knew I was into Rush and all that. So we had that little commonality, but they were saying things like, man, you know, music's going to be free. And this is like 97, 98. And they were kind of trying to impress upon me the fact that the CD contained software that was a piratable piece of code, and it was going to get out, and it was inevitable. There was nothing that could stop it. And they knew that because they were big data guys. They were like, you know, like building giant servers for banks and things. And so I kind of had that idea before we got signed. You know, I was a little nervous about that being a thing. No one was sure about what was going to happen back then. So, you know, everybody's opinion was taken with a grain of salt. But as it started to kind of creep in that direction, around the time that we got our major label deal, which was the toward the end of 1999, 3 years or 2 years after I was told that music was going to be free, I started bringing that up with the people at the label, and they had no idea. I didn't even know what I was talking about. They had no clue. They didn't know. They did not know that what they were selling was data. They had no idea. So there was a disconnect from the very start on just the structure of how business was going to happen. And then when we got when our first record came out and had its first week of returns, they were like, oh man, you sold 19,870 copies, what's really important, you failed to break the psychological barrier of 20,000 records from your first debut week, you know.
What?
And I was like, I said that, I was like, well, you know, what's going on Napster? Like, you know, what's happening there? Like, are any of these like sort of burgeoning sharing sites doing something with the song? And it turned out that they were. It was huge. Was LimeWire alive back then? What was the first?
For me, it was Napster. That's what I was using.
Yeah, I remember Napster and LimeWire. I remember there being a crossover that they were around at the same kind of time.
Look, even back then, even though we knew that it was sort of trouble for the old school people at the label, we were kind of excited about the fact that that was happening at all, because we were a localized, you know, New York City band that had 300 people who knew about us and would come to our shows. Then that was it, you know. So the fact that this internet thing was making people have our stuff was incredible, even though there was no money going back and forth. And then over time, it was apparent that there were a lot of influences at the label that didn't reflect the relationship we had with our A&R guy, which was actually good. Our A&R guy was a vinyl collector weirdo who had a corner office, and he was really, really into music and exceptionally knowledgeable. And he was cool with us producing our own records. And turned out, we came to find out that the way that had gone through the gates, the notion of us being self-produced at Columbia Records, was that he had kind of told everybody that that was how it was, and if you don't want it, then don't do it. But that's how they do things. So he was like kind of really standing up for us, oddly, at a time when that was an unpopular thing to do. But a multinational corporation is way bigger than one guy. And as we got through the Columbia system for releasing records in Sony Australia and Sony France and all of that stuff, we got further and further away from his ability to protect us, and found ourselves kind of having to huddle together. And we kind of got really angry with all of the like assaults on what we did. Like, everyone was trying to give me a Les Paul to play. They hated my acoustic guitar, and they wanted me to put on leather pants that were tight. And, you know, it was just one of these early things I had that I really felt comfortable with on stage. Was I dressed like the guy from, you ever see a movie called The Last Dragon from the 80s?
No.
It's kind of like a Karate Kid knockoff, only it's much, much cooler, in my opinion. It's a better film. But the kid in it is this kid, Leroy, who dresses like, he wears like those cheap Chinese suits from down on Canal Street. And I used to buy those and wear them on stage with like these big Kangol hats and stuff. And it was, you know, couldn't really see my face all that well. And I liked that, you know, I wanted it to be like this character.
Exactly.
Sort of like... Yeah, like some like urban ninja kind of thing.
Because
sure. That movie really inspired me, and it was my favorite film. And they were so not into that. They were like...
Well, it makes sense that this would lead you to becoming not only an independent band, but also a self-managed group. You know what I mean? Which I think is phenomenal, you know, for... I strongly urge many independent artists to do this, but, you know, having... been where you guys have been, and also to remain self-managed now, you know, I guess what I want to ask you is, how do you balance all the different things that you need to take care of?
Not always well, to be honest.
Like updating your bio?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I spent a ton of time making the music, re-recording the drums. Mm-hmm. I mic everything myself. I set up the drums and mic everything myself, and dial in all the preamps and all that stuff. And we spent a lot of time actually sculpting the music. And the reason is because I want it to sound like nothing else, and be part of the experience for me is exploring new sounds or a new way to make the sound that we're trying to accomplish. But that doesn't necessarily jive well with management or people who want you to churn out and have something out for Christmas and all that stuff.
Right. Well, also being self-managed, I mean, like, you guys have been through a lot more than I think the average band's been through. You know what I mean? So at least if you had, you know, someone, I guess, protecting you or managing you, it might have been a little bit easier. But I guess that's the downside of it, right? So the plus side is you have full control of everything, but the downside is shit happens to you, and you guys have to take care of it. You know what I mean? The intellectual property theft, interstate art heist investigation, like we mentioned in the beginning, the list just keeps going on. You know,
I want there to be a movie about you guys.
I'll do it. I'll direct and edit it. Okay, we got it.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you, you know, regarding all that stuff, is there maybe one specific trial or tough situation that you've been able to turn into a positive?
Well, everything goes into your experience baskets. And then you use it to be positive in the future, so you don't fuck up again. But it's funny you mentioned the word trial, because we actually had a trial. I sat on the witness stand and was cross examined, and
oh my gosh,
in New York Supreme Court. And what had happened was we had a manager who took more money than he deserved. We fired
classic
him.
Story, yeah.
Yeah, we fired him for that. He sued us for firing him, and then he lost.
That's good news.
But the 2 years and $60,000 on legal fees later, and we won the case because I had kept every little piece of paper, and there was a post-it note in his handwriting that kind of like cracked the whole egg.
No way.
For him. That was so stressful and so scary. And it was like, it was this feeling of like, okay, since I was 11 years old, I wanted to play music, you know, like do music. And somehow, without going to music school or engineering school or knowing anybody in the industry through your family, I actually got a major label record deal, and the song was appreciated by people. And now this guy is going to sue it away from me. Like, and it's all going to be gone. And the thing about management contracts is it's 25% or 15% or 20%, whatever the percentage is. If the guy's not doing the job and bringing that money in, it's an unaffordable cost. So, but the problem is you only find out after it's too late that he can't actually do the job and bring that 25% to the table or 15%. So, you kind of, it's a very dangerous game signing a management contract with somebody. A lot of people are ethical and will let you go, but I don't think the majority of people are like that. I mean, your manager really has to be like a member of the family, like a truly right. trusted, you know, this person is never going to do anything to harm you because it's 100% in his or her best interest not to. And that's really hard to find. I mean, it's just really hard to find, you know. It's kind of like love, like tons of people mm-hmm. go their whole lives without having a real love affair and then die. And that's just the way that it is, you know, like,
well, you're making me feel better about being self-managed and not having a manager or a label or anything behind me. You're making me feel a lot more confident about that. So thank yeah. you.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a royal pain in the ass sometimes. Like,
of course,
you know, when I'm looking at a contract and I get to like the 20th page of a contract and I'm like, oh, I can't afford to have an attorney read this. I don't have the money to make sure this gets done right. I will have to do this like it's homework in school. Yay, you know. And while you're doing that, none of the music is actually happening, and you're not getting better at what you do on exactly. stage. And yeah. it's like it sucks. But that's why we've slowed our cycle down. You know, I would prefer to be happy about a record that I put out every 3 years than to have all kinds of like regrets about the ones that we churn out every 6 months. So
you could not be making me feel better right now. Let's do a fun little game. Let's do 20 questions. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Let's do this. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Meat or veggies?
Veggies.
Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter.
Indie or major?
Oh, wow. That's tough. That is such a loaded...
What's the first answer that came to your mind? We stumped
Injure?
Yoga or yogurt?
Oh, man. I love yogurt, but yoga.
Canada or Scotland?
One of our feelings are going to be hurt, so, I mean, you just got to do it anyway.
Scotland.
Education or experience?
Experience.
Marvel or DC?
Oh, man. You guys are going to get me in trouble with
we asked
four
the tough
people on my
here.
Twitter. Marvel.
CD or vinyl?
Vinyl.
Talent or attitude?
Talent.
Star Wars or Harry Potter?
You already know the answer to that. It's Harry Potter.
Yeah, I saw that on your Twitter. PlayStation or Xbox?
PlayStation.
Iron Maiden or AC/DC?
Oh!
That one hurts. I saw physical oh. pain on that one. He's actually
I know,
in pain.
And bear in mind, I did create these questions because I wanted this to hurt.
Yeah. Because you're a miserable you're sadist.
Yeah.
AC/DC. Oh God! I feel like I'm gonna throw up.
Well, you've got a few more tough ones coming up, so keep that down for the moment. Batman or Superman?
Oh man,
this one should be easy.
Superman.
Twerk Ooh. Or work?
Did you say twerk?
No, maybe.
No, what did you say?
Twerk or work? You're also allowed to twerk while you work. Ironically. Course.
Yeah, both at the same time. I mean, I do. So,
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson.
No, you don't like the Bolt? The power guy?
No!
Yeah, exactly. Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Celine Dion.
whale or kale?
A whale as in like whale meat that a living whale over dead kale, is that what you mean?
Oh, you know, we could even think of it in terms of as emojis. So it could be the whale emoji or the kale emoji, which probably doesn't exist, but it would just be green.
Whale.
It'd just be a pile of green crap.
Whale. As long as it's alive and able to breathe, a whale.
Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler.
And your final question.
Mm-hmm.
Ross or Marcio?
Yep, we went there.
And just in case anyone doesn't know, I'm Ross and that's Marcio.
Yeah, I know.
Oh no, we did have one guest.
We had a guest who didn't understand. Yeah.
No. I'm gonna go with Marcio. Because yes! Ross is a bit of a sadist, and he got the Scotland answer and all that.
Yeah. Brandon, you have no idea. This might be my first win in months, so thank you so much. You have no idea what you've done for me right now. well, you know, going back to the whole being unsigned and unmanaged, although you are managed by yourselves for the past 8 years, sorry. Just quickly, what would you say to other bands who want to take a similar approach?
Well, I don't think anything that I know is applicable, because I think the whole entire affair is shape-shifting so fast. I think that conventionality is kind of the danger, that you're going to have to find your own way, and it's going to be built on mistakes and weird things and on the unexpected, and to some degree, a willingness to a let go of the things that you thought were going to happen or hoped would happen, and kind of roll with what you can get and what you can do. Just be prepared to alter your plan. It's like that Leonard Cohen lyric, like, forget your perfect offering, you know, like there's something wrong with every single situation, and in particular the one that your notions are built on, like your dreams and notions are built on this situation that you think you're going to be able to build for yourself, and it's, you might not know it, but it's got holes all over it. You know, it's broken. So learn how to use the broken version of your dreams.
We're all guilty of maybe holding on to the initial ideas that we have and not being open to the other things that happen that may actually take us somewhere else. And speaking of going somewhere else, where is the best people for find? Oh, start that sentence again. My sentence, gave up like as it was coming out of my mouth. So what I was going to say there was, what's the best place for people to connect with you online?
Twitter, 100%. I know it's kind of fading and it's gotten violent and it's got lots of Nazis on it now, but I still like Twitter for some reason. And that's where I have the sort of the best musical conversations with people, you know, people who like our music and people who don't. And, you know, occasionally I'll get into like a big long thread with a Rush fan just 'cause I'm also one, a huge one. And, that's definitely the spot to connect with me personally.
So yeah, so if people want to find out what you're up to, if they want to debate with you about, you know, who's better, Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton, I'm sure you're going to have some angry Bolton fans on your case. Yeah. If you want to debate with us on Twitter, feel free. You'll find us on there. We're on Facebook, iTunes, and YouTube. You can't really debate with us on iTunes. You can just listen to us.
Yeah.
And YouTube, you mean, you could debate with us, but probably not. Just debate with us on Twitter or Facebook. You can also visit our website and you can pick up one of our shirts, which we obsessively talk about and wear every Tuesday. Yeah.
I go into my closet and I just have a whole, like, kind of like Superman, I just have a whole bunch of Virgil Antic shirts to choose from.
He's actually burned all of his other clothes because he needs no other clothes, because he's got seven shirts, one in each color, one for every day of the week, and he just rotates them. That's how he lives his life.
You guys are like the Blues Brothers.
Here we go. And as for me, I'm working on my second solo album, and as I said in the intro, you can be a part of it at marcinvalley.com/pledge, and when you
do that, when you contribute to the new album, you get an automatic download of my new acoustic EP, The Reimagining, before it's even properly, officially released to the world. So make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, which are all my name, Marcio Novelli, MarcioNovelli. I only do that because people have told me, how do you spell your name? Well, that's how.
Yeah. Hey, how long have you been making records, Marcio?
Over a decade as a solo artist.
Okay, now I have something to catch up on.
There we go. I don't have that much music out, though. Independent as well, it takes a long time. And I've had two kids as well, so it's slowed down.
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm back at it this year, baby.
Our most recent single is exclusively available at weedist.com right now. And will not be on the download sites, iTunes, for a little while. So we're giving it some time on the website first.
I like that.
Yeah.
Everyone should go check it out.
And speaking of websites, I am working on websites for various artists at the moment, and you can check out my work at electrickiwi.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi. Please don't tweet me to tell me that I should like Star Wars, because I'm really sorry, but I just don't. And you'll find me on Facebook as Electric Kiwi Design. But yeah, I'm open to conversations, just not about Star Wars. Thanks.
Same here. I love having conversations on any social media platform, especially Twitter and Facebook.
Facegram.
That's better than that.
Facegram. There we go. Anyway, actually, I like Facebook or Twitter. Instagram's cool too. I think Twitter is probably my favorite too, Brandon. But anyways, this episode was brought to you by Chris Keaton, Joe Centenary, Buck Naked Soap Company, a vegan soap company, thumbs up, 30 Roses, and Social Surge. All links are in the show notes, so please check them out, because they help to keep this show alive so that we can interview great artists and interesting people like Brandon.
Exactly. And if you'd like to sponsor the show and receive a free t-shirt, again, I'm always one that's talking about these t-shirts, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic. Also, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and I did this before.
You need to keep inventing social networks in my sleep.
Just subscribe to us on iTunes, everybody. That's as simple as that. And leave us a comment.
You are a genius, Ross.
Oh, I know. I just can't help it. I'm
sorry. Zuckerberg's going to hear that. He's going to be like, oh, God.
Get me, Ross.
Just give me any two things
Smith.
And I'll combine them, you know?
Oh, my God, Brandon. Yeah, seriously, man. This has been such a true pleasure. Little disclosure to our audience. This is our actual first interview that we are recording in 2017, even though it's coming out. You're currently listening to this in February, but this is our first interview of the year, and we thank you, because it's been a lot of fun, and you're just a great dude. It really has been a true pleasure.
Oh, thanks, guys. That's really nice. Yeah, it's been fun, man. As tired as I am, you guys are really peppy and fun.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, so connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.